The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own. This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
The Federal Football Report is back on 1500 AM Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield, ready for season number three. At this point, look, I don't know if our bosses actually want the show on the air or whether they're just allowing us to do it. But yeah,
what happened is we didn't want to do the show after last night's debacle, but they insisted that we continue and follow through with the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you guys are coming.
You wanted the show. You're going to do the show. Right, so thank you so much for another year of the Federal Football Report. I do know there's at least five people who are looking forward to it. I got some text messages, and they said, is the show coming back this year? I said, hey, man, we're going to bring you guys great burgundy and gold insight. We're going to take a look at these games and let you know what we think, and so it's going to be awesome. Yeah, so I told them, yeah, we're back. So we've got at least five people that are looking forward to the show.
Hey, five is better than none.
Yeah, and so, look, you didn't hear any kind of preseason analysis. We didn't do any kind of training camp shows, nothing crazy like that, because we're already in midseason form.
We don't need
to warm up, and so we just jump right in right after week
one. And it's fortunate for you that we didn't do it the preseason. Season because we could have depressed you in a lot of ways. Now, look, you know, we make no bones about it. I'm a big Burgundy and Gold fan, right? Mm-hmm. But even being a fan, I'll give you truthful analysis because I'm a football fan as well.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so we're able to do that. Look, so we'll talk about week one. Redskins come out home opener. Drop it to the Pittsburgh Steelers, 38-16. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot of things from the offense and defense. And, Kevin, we were talking a little bit before the show. I think we're going to have two uniquely different views on what happened.
Yeah, I think so.
And we'll get kind of into that as well.
Well, the thing that disturbed me, the first off the bat, when you looked and you saw the number of Pittsburgh fans, they were at the home opener.
I saw a ton of terrible towels being waved in the air. I'm like, wait a minute, is this a home game?
And it wasn't like they mugged the D.C. fans, right? The people sold their tickets, right? You know,
excuse me, I'll get to my seats. Up front. And it was funny because when Antonio Brown scored one of his touchdowns, I saw him mouthing off, and my wife said, look at him taunting the fans. I said, he might actually be talking to some Pittsburgh supporters because they were so many of them there at the game. But this is a recurring theme, it seems like, week after week, that, you know, whether it's Giant fans, whether it's Philadelphia Eagles fans, Cowboy fans, Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh fans actually travel pretty well here in this area. And so, you know, they're always giving away seats.
Well, that's the theme.
There's no home field advantage.
You know, that's the theme of this team, right? It's nothing. There's no fear. I mean, the attitude of this team is so complacent right now. It's so, matter of fact, I kind of heard this music at one point during the show. You know what that is?
From The Walking Dead.
Yeah, that's the theme from The Walking Dead, right? And it fit. You know? It fit because they were just like, they were just there, like occupying space, right? There was no sense of urgency, no drive, no fire, no passion. Well, what was going on?
Let's just start with the first half, and we'll take a look at the offense. Let's just get into our analysis. The funny thing is that I think, like we said, we're going to have two different takes on what happened. When I look at the first half, number one, Kirk was not sharp early. You know, he didn't look like the franchise $20 million guy. There were a lot of passes that he threw that were really, really low. I think the running game came out looking all right with Matt Jones. I know there was a lot of concern there, but they seemed to be able to get a little bit of push and able to run primarily in the first quarter. I do think that first, maybe it was like in the second drive, that 4-6, I thought that was a gutsy call. You're at home, you're moving the ball, the defense seemed to be playing well. And so I was kind of encouraged early by what I saw, other than a couple of those passes by Kirk Cousins that was a little behind, a little low. So the offense early got a good grade for me.
Okay, I agree with everything you said, except it's all wrong. First of all, the running game was non-existent. They opened the season passing the ball. That lets you know what their mentality is. The whole mentality is...
Well, we know they want to throw the ball anyway. Running, I mean, they gear the whole offense towards that.
Running is like steak sauce to them, right? You know, you can have a good steak. If you want to change your pace, you might throw a little sauce on it. But it's not integral. Perhaps if they look at the film and saw how Pittsburgh utilized the running game, how the advantages there are to having a good running game in terms of time of possession, in terms of wearing down your opponent.
But I feel like they had that that early in the game. I mean, the Redskins were up, I believe it was 6-0 in the first quarter. And it was almost, and we'll talk about the Cowboys, I guess, when we do our NFC wrap in the next couple of segments, is, you know, they were up 6-0 in the first quarter, and they were running the ball. They controlled the clock, and Pittsburgh could, but you got to convert those opportunities into touchdowns. You can't kick field goals. I mean, it's a different story if it's 10-0 or 14-0 as opposed to 6-0. One touchdown and you're down.
Yeah, but see that in this offense, in this quote high powered unquote offense, a field goal is a failure because your offense is supposed to be so dynamic, so unstoppable that when you have to settle for 6 points, you know, if you're kept out of the end zone, you fail. I mean, if you got these unstoppable weapons, the Jordan Reeds and the Deshaun Jacksons and the first round pick who can't seem to make it. He did make it on the field, but you know, I'm not going to down him. Like maybe next segment, but a field goal is a failure. You have to dominate your opponent, knowing that your defense has issues. Your best defense is a high powered offense, and I didn't see that.
Well, I feel like they got half the job done. I felt like in the first half, primarily the first quarter, that they ate up a lot of clock, that they were able to run the ball. The only, like you said, the only failure was they weren't able to convert those into touchdowns. They kicked field goals.
You know, Pittsburgh has a good coach, man. Mike Tomlin is a good coach because knowing that they were determined to pass the ball, you saw how many times he just dropped everybody. He had a three-man rush, everybody in coverage. The crossing patterns, he couldn't hit on a couple of them, but a lot of times they were dropping a linebacker who would normally be rushing, right? Mm-hmm. He'd drop him back into one of the passing lanes and made Kurt think and made him have to improvise. So, again,
I guess part scheme. I mean, part defensive scheme. I mean, so, you know, there is another team that you're playing. You got to play against the professionals. So it's not all you know, what are the Redskins doing or not doing. A lot of it did play into the fact that what is Pittsburgh doing on defense. And they did play back, and they didn't want to give up chunk yards. And I feel like there was maybe one or two long passes, or at least plays that ended up with long yards to Deshaun Jackson. But other than that, they did a pretty good job of keeping everything in front of them.
Exactly. So it's up to the Burgundy and Gold to improvise at that point. We got to adjust.
We didn't see any adjustments happening at all.
It's like we said, this is how we practice this. This is how we how we're going to work it out, and it's going to work for us eventually, right? But it didn't. That's the thing.
It will work eventually, except it hasn't worked yet.
And you know what? Someone, you know, one of our millions of fans made a good point to me. They said Kurt was like a surprise to people last year. They didn't, and the offense was a surprise. But you know, in the offseason, all these defensive coaches talk to each other, right? Yeah. They get together, right? That's what happened to the read option. The coaches got together and said, "What do you do to combat this? What do you do to combat?"
Well, we saw it even a few years ago when Miami had a lot of success running that Wildcat. And everybody thought, oh, the Wildcat's going to take over the league. Everybody's going to run the Wildcat. You got to get your Wildcat quarterback. And no one does the Wildcat.
No one does the Wildcat. So Kurt, after being on film for a year and having people analyze him, he's not going to have the surprise success. I'm not saying he's not going to be successful, but you kind of see why they weren't in a hurry to give this boy a big long-term contract.
My first half assessment or grade for the offense would be a C+. I mean, I'm guessing you wouldn't give them that high of a mark.
No pluses at all, right? You know, I give them a C-. I give them a C for just showing up. But it did take some skill to put the jersey on and to tie up the cleats.
You made the team for the first game.
You know what? Do they tie up their own cleats? To do the trainers tie him up. So, yeah, we're gonna give him a C- for this, you know, just a C for showing up, but the minus for the Walking Dead aspect.
So, I thought the offense was – so, but now we move on to the defense in the first half. And, again, I think we have a different perspective. I thought that the defense looked okay, given the fact that there were two almost turnovers, you know. And we'll talk about that Josh Norman strip of Antonio Brown. He caught the ball and tried to make a football move, and Josh stripped the ball. That should have been a fumble. It shouldn't have been. And as a matter of fact, I think that there was one ref that said it was a fumble. They get together and say it's an incomplete pass, and then when they have to review on film, they had to review it whether or not it was an incomplete pass and not a fumble, which changes the proof of burden, because the proof of burden would have been, did he catch the ball, or did he fumble, or did he not fumble, as opposed to did he catch the ball or not catch the ball?
Right.
And if that first ref called the fumble, which he did, then that's what they have to go on. I don't think that you can just huddle together and then change it, and then it's got to be reviewed on something totally different.
Yeah, well, usually it's Dez Bryant who's in that situation and is catching a touchdown pass.
You know, you're not lying. That happens, and it happened Sunday with Dez against the Giants. It's always him near the sidelines in the end zone, and he drops the ball, and sometimes they call it a touchdown, sometimes it's not.
Yeah, that whole football move thing, they got to do something about that, because a catch is a catch, and a drop is a drop. He caught the ball, and he had
possession of it.
He had possession, his feet hit the ground.
He was trying to turn.
If he catches the ball and just stands there, he stands for like 5 seconds, and doesn't, he just doesn't do anything.
And doesn't make a quote football move.
And then somebody comes and hits him, right? Is that a non-football move fumble? See, they got to change that.
But then you got the fumble on Big Ben, although the Skins had it, but then they lose it, you know, in the bottom of the scrum and Pittsburgh. I mean, these are the type of things that you get that you can add to what was field goals, you know what I mean? And now you're looking at maybe a 13-0 lead or something like that.
Anybody who's ever played organized football, when they're going through the drills, they always tell them, always don't pick the ball up on the fumble.
Fall on it. Especially when you're not used to handling the ball. All you're used to do is tackling people.
Yeah.
You're 300 pounds. Just
fall on the ball.
Stop trying to be nimble, picking it up.
Fall on the ball. But we'll talk about later on in the game. A lot of times pro athletes just don't seem to know what the rules of the game, what they should be doing, when they should go out of bounds. But that's a different story. But yeah, fall on the ball.
So almost two turnovers in the first half. I think both of those happened in the first quarter. Maybe the Josh Norman happened in the second quarter. But you have two possible turnovers. Pittsburgh kind of got things rolling, especially towards the end of the second quarter. And so they went up 14-6 at halftime. But 14-6 at halftime, given what I saw, I felt like, okay, the team might be able to do something with this game. I didn't feel like it was out of hand in the first half, so I think the team played fine in the first half.
Yeah, I felt that was about the way it was supposed to go. Having not watched a lot of Pittsburgh in the preseason, which is hard to judge anything by the preseason, I do know that the Steelers notoriously start slow.
Right.
And they come on strong at the end of the season, right? I saw a graphic at one point during the game that said that Big Ben, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell were only on the field all together for 59 snaps.
That makes sense, man.
Right,
and again, Le'Veon Bell not in the game yesterday, but D'Angelo Williams.
Yeah, but it takes a minute for the Steelers to get going. And last night, they had a couple of unknown factors. And I forget the player's name. Forgive me. It's the preseason. You know, it's the first game of the season for us. Number 50, who caught the interception and ran back for a million yards. And the kid from Maryland, the D.C. native. Those are unknown factors for the Steelers. Their first time starting.
Right.
And just starting on Monday Night Football. And they didn't really know what to expect. And they showed out. They played hard, right? You know, they played with effort. The effort that I didn't see from the Burgundy goal, right? You know, what I saw from the Burgundy and Gold,
which is why you labeled the Walking Dead game.
Yeah, it just, there was nothing there. There was the only fire I saw was for some reason when Josh Norman decided he was going to pick a fight with one of his teammates on the sideline.
Right? Yeah. Where was that fight? You know, that did. I was looking at that. That seemed kind of weird. But then also, you know, you get these situations where you know the Steelers are up. You know, I don't know what was it, 24-9, and then someone makes a tackle, and then they're all jawing off. It's like, come on, man. Nothing irks me more than that. Now, I will say this, too, as we move to the second half. Again, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, website federalnewsradio.com, it's talking about adjustments. Pittsburgh did a great job adjusting in the second half. Where were the defensive adjustments for the Skins? I understand that, you know, we've got, you know, look, you got egos when it comes to coaches. And I understand we have a scheme. We believe in our players. We believe that blah, 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 blah. But Breland's getting toasted, okay, on Monday Night Football by Antonio Brown. You just paid Josh Norman a tremendous amount of money to come here. He's a shutdown corner. Or at least that's what you're told, he's a shutdown corner. Why isn't he following Antonio Brown every week? I don't care whether he plays slot. I don't care whether he plays left side or right side. Why don't you make that adjustment and say, okay, you know what? We tried this. It's about to get out of hand. Because at one point in the game, it was still, 24-16.
So the
Skins were still in the game late. At some point, why aren't you, okay, this game's not out of hand. What we need to do is put our best corner on their best receiver and maybe play cover two everywhere else. That happens all the time. Belichick does that. Denver's done that.
Well, you know, I've talked to a couple of people about this, and it was brought to my attention that a couple of guys in the league don't move. Like, for instance, Richard Sherman doesn't move, but, You know, they had at one time, they had, you know, Culliver, and they had Maybane, and they had a tremendous defense that would facilitate this. Mm-hmm. What I don't understand is, if this guy is the best corner in the league, shouldn't he be able to? I mean, that's why he's the best corner in the league. He can not only shut down one side of the field, right. He can shut down the other side of the field too.
Give me your best receiver. Because here's the thing: is Josh Norman on the? Because I think he plays the left side or the right side, whichever side they want to keep him on. If he plays the other side of the field, is that Josh Norman still better than Breshad Breeland? I think so. And so, why not have him shadow Antonio Brown?
It would seem that way. It was, and the
you're paying him like he. Is.
The confusing part to me is when a team game plans against the Burgundy and Gold, doesn't make it easier for them? Right. They say, well, you know, Josh Norman is going to be on this side.
So we'll just move everything
to the other side.
So what we'll do is we'll bring in our third string receiver. We'll play him on the outside against Josh. Yeah, we'll do everything to the left. I mean, yeah, exactly. And here's the thing. I understand you plan your defense for whatever, you know, for that to run it that way. But there's this thing called adjusting. There's a plan B. There's a plan C. There's Breshad Breeland can't stop Antonio. And here's the thing. No knock on Breeland. I like Breeland.
Right.
But Antonio Brown was the best. He's one of the best receivers in the league.
He caught 134 balls last year, right?
Exactly.
And not on Breeland. He didn't play Breeland last year.
Yeah, yeah, right. They all didn't come on Breeland. They came on other guys, by the way.
Right.
And so you have to have this. Okay, you know what? It's getting out of hand, or the game is still close. We're 8 points away. Let's switch this thing. Let's put our money guy on their money guy. And let's if we're going to lose, let's lose that way. Let's lose with our best guy guarding their best. And I understand it's not as easy as drawing up a play in the dirt like we do out in the playground, or whipping out this little notepad that I have and just writing down, okay, Breeland should not be checking. I know it's not that easy, but sometimes it is.
Maybe it should be that easy. Let's not overlook the obvious, right?
I forget who a wise man once said to me, and he was quoting another wise man, one philosopher, and he said, sometimes it is the first duty of the wisest men to just restate the obvious. That sometimes the wisest thing you can do in a situation is just state what is obvious, because we outthink ourselves, we outsmart ourselves, we try to get too fancy. And it's like, you know what? We're playing football out in the playground, right? What happens? The two best people go head up. They want to go head up, and they want to challenge each other, because you know he's the best on your team. I know he's the best on my team. They're going to check each other. That's what happens. Why in the world can that not happen on a professional level?
It can, unless your ego will prevent you from adjusting to the point where you can say, well, my original plan isn't working. Let me change that. Now, let's defend Breeland a little bit. Breeland was out there on the island against the
all
best receiver
himself.
In the league with no pass rush.
Right.
But see, here's the
right.
thing.
Right.
We sat in these same chairs a year ago and was talking about the lack of pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
This team had a first-round pick this year, mm-hmm. and instead of addressing one of the obvious problems, now they had a record-setting offense last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, instead of addressing a need and getting a first-round pass rusher, a first-round linebacker who could play the run and pay the pass, they didn't address that at all.
Yeah,
they stood pat there and went for a wide receiver who, this was the first time I saw him, was last night.
And I'm just trying to think, you know, when it comes to making an impact this year, maybe it's a move for 2 years from now or whatever, if they decide to bring, you know, Deshaun back or Pierre back. But when they drafted Josh, I'm like, when is he going to play? How does he get on the field? Yeah. Like, what are you going to say? I just don't understand that when you have more pressing needs, and we saw some of those needs last night. And again, what was wise with Pittsburgh, again, you talk about being out coached. I'm watching this, and there were several third down, and that's another reason why I thought the defense played pretty good, although they just kept giving up, and obviously you got to be able to get off the field as a defense, but they kept giving up third and shorts, you know, third and six, third and fours. And Pittsburgh did a great job of converting on those third and shorts. But every time there's a third and short, you look down, and there's Antonio Brown on Breeland. And I just kept thinking to myself, they're not going to go to him now. They're setting this up. They're going to lull them to sleep, thinking every third and short, yeah, we have them on the island, but we're not going to go to them. And then in the fourth quarter, that's exactly what they did. They went right to them.
Well, let me disagree with something else you said earlier, like the gutsy call on fourth and six. Now, that came after the surprise call by Pittsburgh on fourth and one, where they packed everybody on the line,
then short the yards, drag, yeah.
And just said, okay, you just go, Antonio Brown, we'll throw the ball in the air, you catch it, right?
That's
a pretty good simple play. Throw the ball to our best player,
right?
Because they don't have their best player on you, right?
Right.
Now, it's early in the game. There's no need. There was absolutely no need for the Burgundy and Gold to go for it on fourth down with 6 yards, because you got to look at when you're playing something like that, you got to look at what's the outcome if we don't make it. And that was just basically taking a big balloon and letting the air out of it.
I don't know, though. I mean, I feel like, you know, I feel like at this point, you're in the game. You know, I think it was still 6-0 at the time. Maybe it was 6-7. But you're in the game. It's the home opener. You're trying to keep the crowd in it. I thought it was a good call.
That's why you can't do it, because if you don't make it, you take the crowd out. And the air that goes out of your balloon, it goes directly to Pittsburgh's balloon.
That's exactly what happened.
That was a pure ego move, man. Wow. Pure ego. They scored a touchdown on fourth down. Watch what we can do with my brilliant offense, right? Pure ego move. It got so bad that John Gruden, I'm not a big John Gruden fan. I think he's
a little overrated, by the way.
The first thing he said last night, because they had a new play-by-play guy, a brand new. The first thing he said was, yeah, you know, we had the number one rated show for the past 6 years, so there's a lot of pressure on you tonight. you know, he's joking, of course, but he says this about the guy on national TV, right?
You know? It didn't dawn on me. Like, I mean, of course, I knew about Tirico not being with ESPN, but it didn't dawn on me until then. I was like, wait a minute, Tirico's not here.
Right.
I found myself less interested in the play-by-play, because Tirico's good.
Yeah.
I mean, Gruden, I mean, he's good, but Tirico kind of holds it all together, you know, and I just kind of miss that, you know.
I usually turn the volume down because I want to hear what I got to say. But it got so bad that he stopped calling his brother. He said, here's what Jay Gruden got to do.
But you know, he does that a lot. He refers to him as my brother. Like, he did that a couple times early in the show.
In the game,
yeah, until, and I'm like, wait a minute. What?
Until he started showing that he was messing up. Then he started saying, that guy.
that guy, the Redskins coach is what he called him. It's the Federal Football Reporter on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. They wanted us back for a third season. We tried not to because of the game last night, but we said, we made a commitment, so we'll do it. We got a commitment to 3 segments this show. That's the first segment. We'll come back with the second segment of The Walking Dead. Oh, no. I mean, of the Federal Football Reporter. Talking about the Washington Redskins lost 38-16. We're going to talk NFC East in a few. We're going to talk about the Cowboys week. It's Cowboys week. But I also want to mention one other thing about the defense. And again, I know Kevin will disagree with this, but that's okay. This is what we do here on the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, the website federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. Kevin, we love doing what we're doing. We're going to continue recapping the Washington Redskins 38-16 home opener loss, season opening loss as well, Pittsburgh
Steelers.
It's for the
fans. You know what I just realized, man?
What's that?
We might have cut this part out. But we're the only two brothers covering the Burgundy and Gold in this town that don't have Super Bowl rings.
Yeah, no, listen. Doc Walker, he's got a ring.
Yeah.
Brian Mitchell, he's got a ring. Yeah. Although I did hear Clinton Portis on the radio this morning.
Oh, he doesn't have a ring. Okay, I was wrong. And you know what? We love those guys, right? We love their analysis. We don't dislike the rest of them, but you got to admit, there's a certain flavor to this show that you don't hear on the other show.
Well, because, first of all, we're fans, first of all.
Yes,
football fans. Mm-hmm, some Redskin fans. We're football fans here on this show.
Yeah.
And,
although we were discussing that, right, about since we're fans, do we necessarily have to be fans of the Burgundy and Gold, right? Do we have to?
Maybe.
It would definitely help the numbers. Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, you know, there are unique perspectives that fans bring. And let's talk about it. I mean, look, there's nothing more, unifying, you know, especially among men. You see, especially with fantasy football and other kind of things, and women get included, then sports. I mean, people who normally don't have anything in common, sports bring people together, and in those rivalries or liking certain teams, or whether it's your favorite golfer, no matter what it is, it brings people together. And so I think it's good for fans to have a forum where they can listen and talk with just fans and not be called idiots on talk shows because you're a fan.
And you don't even have to limit it to men, because I was watching the Dallas game because I'm impressed by Dak Prescott. I'm impressed.
I heard
him say the first time, the reason that he was so successful the first time when he got drafted, the first thing he did was got the playbook, locked himself in the room, mm-hmm. and studied.
Right.
From day one, he didn't party, didn't celebrate. And it shows he has a lot of self-awareness. But I was saying all that to say, when my wife saw me rooting for Dak Prescott, she said, what are you doing?
Get out of my house.
I don't care who he is. He's wearing that star, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
no
yeah.
success with him at all. None. You know? So, yeah, we're fans, and we do bring that unique perspective. But there's a lot of common sense, too. Sometimes exactly. I think a guy can get too close to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Too close to the coaches, too close to the players. And we have that. We can step back and just offer that. That the common sense perspective, like, for instance, let's say you got a guy who, let's say he plays cornerback. And let's just say he's the highest playing quarterback in the league. Common sense would dictate that you pay him that much because he can do more than the other cornerbacks
right,
can do,
right?
You know?
And so you would assume you would just switch him on the best player.
How do we know that Bashaud Breeland wouldn't be better if he was on the other side?
Right.
How do we know that? He could be better than Josh Norman if he was
on the other side.
But we'll never know. Because we're stuck in this thing, and maybe they'll get out of it.
And
right,
another stuck in this thing moment, you're thinking, like, wait, what? Like, there was a moment, I think it was in the second half, Pittsburgh punts the ball, and Jamison Crowder, with no one within 25 yards of him, Fair catches the ball, and he catches it, and so much so, like, even Gruden was confused. Okay, gets the play-by-play guy who was with Gruden, said, okay, Crowder with the ball. He asked for a fair catch. No one's anywhere close. I'm like, why would you ask for a fair catch? What in the world is going on there?
It's all about mindset, man. There's a certain mindset that hasn't appeared with this team yet because we don't know where the leadership is right now. That
situational awareness.
Yeah.
Which is a big theme, by the way, this weekend, especially in the NFC
East. And it's about desire. It's about desire, too. Look, perfect example in the Olympics, Allyson Felix going for the gold. And the chick, where was she from? Bermuda, Jamaica? Uh-huh. She just, like, dove across the line, you know,
right.
and won the gold medal. And won the gold medal. Looked up the Olympic rules. Did not cheat.
Right.
Did not cheat. Was perfectly within her
funniest thing in the world. Oh my goodness.
She wanted it more than anybody else in the world. And on the biggest stage in the world, she won the gold medal. By desire.
Yeah. Because that's not something that you see among professional athletes. I don't think anyone does that, right? It's something that happens on a playground.
Right.
You're talking trash with your buddy.
But it was desire.
You're talking trash with your buddy. You're like, we're going to race.
look at it. Skill-wise, speed-wise, Allyson Felix had her beat. She had more skill, had more speed, but desire beat out of the end. A little less talent, more desire, right? You know. So that's what we need to do. We obviously don't have the talent of the other team. We got to increase our desire level. I don't know how you go about doing that.
Kevin, I don't know if I can go on with the rest of the show. It's crazy. No, you're right. You're right. I mean, and that's the desire that made that girl dive across that.
That's right.
On the biggest stage and the biggest.
Let's get her. They got, 27 coaches now? Maybe they need that 28th coach.
She's not making a fair catch with nobody 20 yards.
We need the desire coach. That's right.
Oh,
we're going to find out. Next week, fans, we'll find out who she is. We're going to try to get her to be the desire coach for the
Absolutely. Oh, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Be sure to send us an email, FFR@federalnewsradio.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. FF Rep is the Twitter handle. My Twitter handle is at Claude J Radio. You know, another thing, just to kind of wrap up this game with Pittsburgh, is the fact that when I looked at it, and this is why I couldn't be super mad at the defense. Again, you know, giving up that last touchdown, I feel made it look, from a score standpoint, uglier than maybe it was. And even the last two touchdowns to go up 31 and then 38. But the defense, to me, didn't do great against the run, you know, but we know that that's a weak point anyway. We talked about that last year. But they played a Pittsburgh team that executed pretty good. I mean, there are some times where you're playing okay or you're playing fine, and the other team, they're professionals, they're a good team there in Pittsburgh, and they just execute it.
Well, you're so kind, brother. I mean, did not do well against the run. D'Angelo Williams got 150 yards rushing.
Not the starting running back, by the way.
The last touchdown, he just walked through them and just said, pardon me, excuse me, I got to get over here to my seat.
But that's what I'm saying. Like even when you look into the fourth quarter, going up 31-16, because at one point it was 24-16, the Steelers got the ball and they just ran the clock. And they were able to run. It's late in the game. That happens, you know, you wear out a defense, and so you expect that, especially when your offense is not controlling the ball anymore like they were in the first quarter. So you get the defense to run to getting ran down. So, you know, you get some padded rushing yards late in the game. And then those two touchdowns late in the game, especially the last one. I mean, it was, what, less than 2 minutes on the clock, and they scored after the two-minute warning. No one was around him. Like, he's not going to run backwards just because he's going to be nice. So he just kind of jogged in the end zone because no one was chasing him.
They weren't trying to score. That's the bad part. They were just trying to get on the plane, get back to Pittsburgh. And that's you know, something that they're going to have to address. A lot of that is not scheme. A lot of that is just talent, right? It's the ability. Did you see a lot of those camera angles that ESPN had when they were coming, like, from behind the defense looking forward to the offense? And you saw the mismatch in size with the Pittsburgh offensive line and our linebackers. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. And you know, we've been on the show, doing the show 3 years. Mm-hmm. 3 years I was saying this 3-4 defense is not right for what type of football we're trying to play.
I have no clue why anyone in the NFC ever plays a 3-4 defense.
I don't understand
why anyone anywhere plays a 3-4 defense. It seems ridiculous.
You can't do it. And a lot of times those big offensive linemen were getting on the linebackers, and then that's a guaranteed 5 yards right there. Oh, if you have a patient running back who will let the line get to where they need to be and develop, it's just a physical mismatch.
You know, speaking of their offensive line, it was kind of interesting to me. I was noticing halfway through the game that their left guard, number 73, like, was daggone there standing up, upright the whole time, like pre-snap. And Gruden, these guys pointed out the fact that what he does is, like, Pouncey, the center, does not look back at Big Ben.
Right.
Big Ben taps his foot, and then when Pouncey's supposed to snap it, number 73 taps him on the leg, on the shoulder, or something like that. How weird is that?
Yeah, it was
kind of cool.
He's the traffic cop, right? He was like saying, okay, I want you guys to go over here, and we're going to, and pretty much they told the Bergman to go, we're going to run, like, and then one time, I think I texted you late in the game, I said, no, they didn't just run the counter trade, right? In our home, right? You know, right, that was a slap in the face. That was Mike Tomlin saying, here, take this. You got a little learning to do. Yeah, I think this was a result of them keeping the guys under bubble wrap in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Like, in one play, like, what, one game to start, half to start, didn't even play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, are you that good that you don't need the reps? Is your offense that unstoppable that you don't need to develop your timing, right? You know, are you that afraid that if one of your guys goes down that your season is lost, so you're just going to hide them? Man, this is football.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the football. We'll get our desire coach. Let me find out who she is. She's going. I'm gonna see if we could get her on for an interview, man. The desire coach, right? Because the desire was not there this first game. It's still, you know, it's still early. It's just game one. Let's not panic. Let's not just sell all the tickets now.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I'm not a guy of panic. You know what I mean?
Right.
Wasn't it Shaq that called Stan Van Gundy the master of panic?
Yeah.
None of us. We're not the masters of panic.
We're not going to panic.
It's the first game out of 15. By the way, they lost the home opener last year in a pathetic showing against Miami, and they still won the division, and the division is maybe a little stronger this year than it was last year, but it's still anybody's division. It's not like it's the Giants to take or the Cowboys to take or even the Eagles, and so there's no need to panic here with this team.
It wasn't a need to panic until I saw the rest of the division play this week, you know.
And let's talk about that.
Yeah, I was, you know, going into the season, I said, look, we're starting in the division against two rookie quarterbacks, mm-hmm. two rookie head coaches, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a team that we should just beat because we're better than them because we got this record-setting offense.
Right.
But I didn't see that this...
Well, let's talk about it. So you look at some of those teams. We'll start in the division with the Giants and the Cowboys. Oh, no, you know, let's start with Philadelphia and Cleveland because we'll talk about the Cowboys and the Giants later because we play the Skins play the Cowboys next week. Let's start with the Eagles. The Eagles beat Cleveland, which, you know, that's no big deal. 29-10, but starting quarterback for the first time, Carson Wentz, in a weird situation where they draft Wentz. Bradford wants out. Bradford doesn't get out, but they still bring in Chase Daniels, who had time here in Washington. And so they've got this whole thing going on. Bradford's our guy. Wentz gets hurt, and then a week before the season, they trade Bradford and say, Wentz is our guy. You know, his ribs are fine. And so anyway, they come out and beat the Cleveland Browns 29-10. And again, you know, they look fine doing it. Carson Wentz 22 for 37, 278 yards, two touchdowns. Ryan Matthews 22 carries, 77 yards, and a touchdown. Now again, this is against Cleveland. You know, you don't expect anything good from from the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
And RG3, by the way, on IR. He hurt his shoulder.
Yeah, it's a shame. But, you know, the problem here is you mess around, you're giving a rookie confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's too young to know that he's a rookie and is supposed to have nerves and all this. Because
mm-hmm.
that's what gets most of these guys in the beginning. It's not the opponents. It's because most guys are quarterbacks from the time they grew up, from the time they play pee wee ball, because they're the best athlete, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're the best guy on the team, and then they're smart enough. They have to know the offense, because you know, people would tell you Joe Montana was not a rocket scientist,
mm-hmm.
but he knew what to do. What you know, the plays on the playbook.
Right.
You know, Bill Walsh tell him to run this play. He ran this play and knew all the options, right?
Yeah.
So a rookie quarterback, in the case of Wentz, you're giving him a little bit of confidence. That could be a dangerous thing. And you got the unknown factor of the first year head coach, right? So it's still game one, but they're ahead of us right now. You know?
Right, exactly.
So
and
they look pretty competent doing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So then we move on to the Cowboys game. The Giants go into Dallas. They beat the Cowboys in dramatic fashion, 20-19. And we've heard a lot about Dak Prescott. What was interesting to me was in following the Cowboys in the offseason was. Of course, the big story is Romo being hurt. You know, they win one game, ironically, against Washington with Romo out last year. And so the big news is, okay, so who's going to be the backup? And everyone was acting as if, you know, that was the main story, even though Romo was hurt. I mean, was healthy at the time.
Right.
And so you're watching training camp, and Romo's out there throwing balls, but all anyone wants to talk about is what are you going to do when this guy goes down?
Yeah, because it's happening. It's going to happen.
And so,
it's inevitable.
And so the mood started to switch to say, okay, you know what? Romo's there. We'll worry about the backup quarterback situation. We have to worry about it. The first preseason game he plays in, he hurts his back. and now the ironic thing is that then Dak Prescott comes in, and he's killing it, doing great, you know, and it's just the preseason, but he seems to be competent for the moment, right? And the moment's not too big for him. But he wouldn't even be on the field if the backup quarterback, Kellen Moore, didn't get hurt 2 weeks before Romo got hurt. And so it's funny how things like that line up. But Dak didn't seem bothered by the moment. They didn't seem to play as aggressive as they did in the preseason with him in this game. I mean, there weren't a lot of down-the-field tosses. There were 3 field goals in the red zone early in the game. And I remember in the preseason, I'm looking at this, and there were several back shoulder passes to Dez, over the top to Terrence Williams that they did in the preseason that didn't do in the red zone with this game. I'm like, are they calling this game to not to lose as opposed to win?
Right.
Which they did all year last year. Jason Garrett's not.
Right. It didn't put a lot on his plate. And I think it was to their detriment. They have to open it up. You know,
yeah.
If they want to win.
Right.
If they want to win.
If you want to lose by 1 point or maybe win by 3 points, then do what you did Sunday.
Yeah.
But if you want to win a game by going out there and being the better team, you got to open it up.
And the guy, and he's very confident. He sees the field. He doesn't appear to be rattled. As a matter of fact, it was his teammates that let him down, because in key situations at the end of the game, which was one of the best games of the weekend, by the way, in key situations late in the game when they were out of timeouts, only had one timeout left, and had to drive, this rookie quarterback was leading them down the field for a game-winning drive. Right.
Dunbar gets, I think, like 16 or 17 yards.
And then fails to run out of bounds.
I didn't understand. And everyone talks about Terrence Williams, and yet criticize him. He should have got out of bounds. But there was a play before that, the Lance Dunbar play that you're just talking about, where he should have gotten out of bounds, too, and they would have had more time and a timeout.
Now, what do you think about that? Whose fault is that? Of course, it's the player's fault. But I was saying earlier, maybe that's when you need the veteran leadership in the huddle to say, you catch it, get out of bounds.
Right. Well, the thing is that Dunbar and Williams are both veterans. I don't, like, you know, Jason Garrett had said something like, well, his instincts took over. It's like, no. Forget instincts. And Jason seemed upset about it. I was watching the post-game press conference, and he was saying that, you know, every week in training camp, they go over these situations almost to a meticulous standpoint, where Jason Garrett will stop practice for 2 minutes just to explain the situation and everything, you know, just kind of into the details, right? If you're that detailed, how does this guy have that kind of mental space where he doesn't just automatically? I mean, you see him catch the ball, and you see Dez pointing to the sidelines.
Go that way.
Air traffic control. They should just gave him, like, flashlights.
Yeah.
And they're like, this way. And he just cuts in, and he dies, and he's looking around like, oh, do we have enough time? It's like, oh, goodness.
Man, look, I played football that's on a level that is so far below pros. Instead of getting paid, I should have paid them to play, right? That level, so far below that, so it's no comparison. on that level, the quarterback would say, get out of bounds. You know, we don't have any timeouts. You got to get out of bounds. If it's third and seven, the quarterback would get in the huddle and say, we need 7 yards. Mm-hmm. Don't give me no 5 yards and out, right? This is no good. Yeah. There was some communication, and we don't know. That may have been said in the huddle, right? Yeah. But I tell you another example. The same thing happened in the Detroit game. And Detroit happened to win, but Matthew Stafford was going crazy. Get out of what are you doing? He was saying, and I mean, you can read lips, and you know, we can't repeat everything he was saying, but he was being vocal. And maybe that was missing from the Cowboys, but I do know this. I know that Prescott was leading him down the field for a game-winning drive, and because of those two bow-headed plays, he
didn't lose the game, I'll tell you that much. Yeah, and they put him in some tough situations. They were the third-to-last drive and the second-to-last drive where they were in third and 18, I think, and in the third and 20 because of holding calls. You know what I mean? And you can't do that. Now, I will say this. Alfred Morris is like in the same situation there that he was in here last year. How does he get 9 carries? And each carry, I mean, he's averaged like 6 yards a carry. And they're not giving him the ball because they got Ezekiel Elliott, who seems to be running with his back towards the pressure. It's like, wait a minute. Ezekiel Elliott had 51 yards on 20 carries, 2.6 yards a carry. He's supposed to be the stud. He gets and I don't care about that touchdown. Alfred could have scored. Alfred would have scored from there. Alfred gets 7 carries for 35 yards, and all you do is give him the ball 7 times.
That's a good change of pace.
What is wrong with these people? Yeah,
I do know that we're about to see a motivated Alfred Morris. And here's the thing
about
that.
Just hope to God they don't give him the ball, because they may not even give him the ball.
As much as we were speaking earlier about my wife and the reaction to me, like hoping Prescott does good, even my wife wants Alf to do good.
Of course. You know, everyone loves Alfred.
Everybody loves Alfred, right? You had a guy who gave his all, who was upstanding in the community, who was humble.
Yes.
Right? Everything you want the pro athlete to be nowadays.
And by the way, he was a baller.
I forgot that part.
He could play.
He could play football.
Could
play. But for some reason, couldn't find a reason for him to be on this team. We had to do something or try to do something better, which makes you wonder about these people and their ability to judge talent, right? A lot of the talent who's starting on this team, on our team, starting because the guy in front of them got hurt, right? You know, you got to kind of wonder, and we got to face a motivated Alfred Morris next week, man.
Well, coming up in the final segment, we want to talk about it's Cowboys week, an early Cowboys week, by the way, so not a lot of drama built up in here, which could be a good thing, but we'll talk about Dallas week, and also I think Kevin's going to make an appearance on Jeopardy or something like that. We'll figure it out all coming up next on the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. The website is federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. Redskins dropped the home opener, season opener, 38-16 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Kevin, we're going to keep talking about the NFC East. We talked a lot about the Dallas Cowboys and the Giants game, but more so from the Cowboys' perspective. Good to see Victor Cruz back, salsa dancing in the end zone.
Yeah,
he's back healthy because he had a real gruesome injury. I mean, a real bad injury. And really kind of hampered by 2 years ago and last year. But he seems to be back and seems to have got a kind of a dynamic duo, even though the offense wasn't really potent against the Cowboys.
Yeah, but, you know, the fact that he did make it on the field and he scored a touchdown pass and the Cowboys was trying to, he received it, you know, Cowboys trying to stop him from doing it, and they couldn't do it. So when looking ahead, when the Burgundy and Gold have to face the Giants, what do the Giants do? Do they send...
I'll tell you what you do. Whatever side of the field Josh Norman's not on, you put Beckham on that side,
right.
You put Victor Cruz in the slot on that same side, and then you just put anybody over on the on Josh Norman.
The scary thing is that's exactly what I would do. Whatever side you look up and see, whatever side Norman's lined up on, send Beckham to the other side and send Cruz back and forth. You know what I would do? I would send Beckham in motion to Josh Norman's side, then turn him around and send him back the other way. Just like have a wave when he comes back, right? You know?
Go over there, say hey, and then come right back on the other side.
And then give the ball to Jennings, right?
Let him run up in there, because that's going to stop the run.
It's sad, man. Well, you know, it's so simple. And maybe we're looking at it too simplistic, and the coaches will say the same thing. It's not just a matter of this. We got a scheme. We got a plan. We're going to stick to our plan. We're going to do this and that. That's ego, man. That's ego.
Your plan's not working. Your plan stinks.
Yeah, yeah.
Get with another one.
So you shut down the third-year receiver, right? Yeah, you know, so you shut him down. Big deal, right? You know, and then you – I have nothing against Josh Norman. I'm happy that he has the opportunity to make this money and to do the journal that he's doing on – I believe it's ESPN. He's doing, like, the game. Game journal yeah. every day. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for him. I think that I don't even think it's getting in the way of the game.
I'll be
happier for him if he does all this and wins.
Right.
You know what? Because that'll be better for him. That would be better for him. He will have less detractors because people like were down in the thing before he even like filmed his first shot. Right. You know, it'll be better for him if he can focus some of that into doing something that's better. You know, go to the coach and say, "Hey, coach, I can play more than one half of the field. You know, yeah. even if I can't." Just if he shows up on the right side, don't you think they'll throw off the other offenses? They'll give them something.
Give them a chance to say, "Hey, we may not throw to this guy." Even if they don't test him, like suppose he can't play. You know, as well as he can play on one side or the other. Suppose he can't, or he's not at least better than Breland on the other side. Even if he can't, just the fact that the other team now has to account for that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It gives them something else to think about when there's already a million things to think about pre-snap.
Yeah, but apparently the things that they had to think about is what we're going to do after we score the touchdown on this play.
Here's the thing. You've chronicled the amount of coaches that we have, and you even want to add a motivation.
Yeah, the motivation coach, the chick from the Olympics. Yeah,
you want to add her.
Get her, yeah.
None of these other coaches out of the hundreds that they have on the staff. There's so many coaches on this team. No one said, "Hey, maybe we should just man up, Josh." with Brown. No one just, "Hey, man him up. Let's man him up."
That's, you know, I've
Breland
noticed.
Didn't say, "Hey, you may want to put Josh on him."
I've noticed since Gruden got here. And to me, that was one of the biggest things with the conflict with RG3. Because RG3 had an ego. He wanted to do things his way. And the coach said, "We can't do this because I'm the coach. I got my ego. My ego wins," right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like you make people like that, they're more comfortable with pretty much yes men around them, right?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Don't waste time showing me something else. You do what I tell you to do, and maybe we'll make it work, right? You know? So, it'll be interesting. This is going to be a very interesting season.
Dallas week. Well, it's Dallas week. It's going to be an interesting game coming up this Sunday. Dallas week. It's an early Dallas week. A lot of questions on both teams that haven't really been figured out yet because it's only the second week of the season. You got a rookie quarterback. You got a rookie running back, a familiar running back. Hopefully, for the Redskins, you would hope that the Cowboys do exactly what they did against the Giants and not run Alfred Morris. But if he gets in there and gets cranking, it could be a long day. Will Josh Norman cover Dez Bryant most of the game, or will they move Dez around? Because the Cowboys did experiment a lot with moving Dez around on Sunday, even though Dak wasn't able to get him the ball. How do you see this Cowboys Redskins matchup this Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern? In Landover, Maryland, how do you see that happening?
I see, first of all, I see a motivated Alfred Morris coming to town with a whole stadium full of people here.
Who are going to support him, probably.
Who are going to support him, right, to their own detriment. And that's going to be a unique circumstance, yeah. Right? That would be a unique circumstance.
What was it, 4 years ago? This is fifth year, right? It was 2012, was that rookie?
12 season,
four
yeah.
seasons ago. I mean, 4 seasons ago, at the end of that season, there's no way in the world you could be convinced that Alfred Morris and RG3 would not be on this team.
Right, right.
It's amazing.
They were
competing for Rookie of the Year.
But yeah, you know what? This shows how fickle a portion of this fan base is, right? Because the same people who were cheering them in 2012 were booing them last year, right? You know, so, and right. You know what? And a portion of those people sold their tickets to those Pittsburgh fans.
So and they're going to sell them to these Cowboys fans on Sunday.
And I'm pretty sure they're not listening to this show right now, right? They're probably listening to the Ravens show. But you know what? We don't need you, right? I take that back. I apologize. You're all welcome here because this is where you have to come to get the truth, right? We're not just going to like feed you what you want to hear to make you feel good. There's some harsh realities to this thing, right? You know, mm-hmm. and one of those harsh realities is a rookie quarterback is going to give them a very, very rough time this week mm-hmm. because he doesn't seem to care.
Right.
He doesn't seem to care. And he has a week of experience under his belt and a game from a game's worth of Pittsburgh film to be watching, to study.
Right. Right.
And he's
right.
only going to get better. I think the sky's the limit for this kid.
Yeah, no, Dak seems like a player. He seems like an NFL quarterback. He doesn't seem rattled by the situations. He also seems to be able to make every throw that he needs to make. He's got a big arm, you know. And now the question will be, will Dallas be able to establish the run the way Pittsburgh did? I think if they can, because they couldn't really establish, and partly it was Jason Garrett and these guys not having Alf in the game, because when Alfred was in the game, he was productive, but they couldn't establish run against the Giants. And who knows how that would open up the offense for Dez and for Terrence Williams. And so it just depends on if they can establish the run. Now, conversely, that means the Redskins have to do better at defending the run. Obviously, that's something that's, you know, it's like, well, yeah, duh, genius. Of course, they got to stop it. But it's that obvious every week. It was obvious against Pittsburgh, and they couldn't do it. And so you got to stop the run at whatever cause. And that, I think, is the main game plan, I think, for the Skins coming into this game against Dallas is, first and foremost, you got to stop the run.
You know, it's so funny. Last year, how many times last year I said, you got to give me a yard. Get me a yard. Get me a yard. Now it's got to be stop a yard.
Just stop one yard.
No, yeah, right. They still haven't given me that same yard I've been asking for now. Right. But yeah, they're going to have to make a stand. And that's pretty much, remember Doc Walker used to say, that's a manhood issue right there. Because you just got to impose your will on the guy ahead of you, and the guy in front of you said, I will not be moved. Right.
Right,
you know? And that's what it's about. It's a will thing. Right. So,
and on offense, let it fly, man. Let it fly. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Look, they may do what Pittsburgh did and try to give you everything underneath, but nothing over the top. But you still got to let it fly. You still have to try.
Yeah, one thing too, I've been meaning to bring up is that D'Angelo Hall at the safety spot. I think his experience is helpful, and it lends to him being in the right place at the right time. But even when he comes to bring the big hit, it's just D'Angelo Hall hitting somebody. Right? It's like a mosquito coming at you full blast. Right? You're gonna feel something.
Yeah.
But it's not. They're not looking over the shoulder, looking, you know, anticipating the hit from D. Hall,
right.
We got to look at the safety position too. If it's what's his name, Sua?
But you know, the funny thing about D. Hall, like, I understand the transition, but I didn't think he was that big of a liability at cornerback last year.
I didn't. At one point, he was like one of their best corners.
I'm not sure why they moved him half a step or whatever.
But yeah, there's some tightening up that has to be done. Yeah. Real quick before we go, got an email the other day. Now, years ago as a Lark, I took the online test to appear on Jeopardy, right?
Right.
Because I play Jeopardy all the time at home, and I win half the time, right? You know, until they say, you know, some of the questions are very easy, right? Because they give you the answer in the question.
Right.
And some of them said, you know, this 17th century poet had three fingers on his left hand. Who was Voltaire? You know, I don't know that stuff, right? Uh-huh. Anyway, so I took the test as a Lark. Other day, I got an email that said, hey, we think you'd be good on the show. We invite you to take the test again. They called, they emailed me. I said, well, y'all running out of people to watch, right? So I said, you know what? Why not?
Why not?
It'd be a good time. I'll get on the show. And they said, tell us about yourself, Kevin. I said, well, I co-host a Federal Football Report with Claude Jennings on Federal News Radio, right? You know, it'll be a good chance to get a little pump for the station and for the show.
Right.
So, yeah. So I sent it out on Twitter last night. I said, I'm going to take the test. We're taking the test the first week in October.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Well, and we'll know something, you know. We'll be cheering about something in October. Maybe us leading the division or me going to Jeopardy. One or the other.
But either way, we're going to cheer. We'll have something to cheer about October. And we'll have something to cheer about next week. And we'll be wrapping up a game. We'll be wrapping up the Cowboys and Redskins.
Cowboys,
man.
Dallas week.
So get all your trash talk out. You know, wear your Redskins gear this week. And please don't sell your tickets to Cowboys.
No, please.
If you've already done it, shame on you. But please hold on to those tickets. Don't let this be Dallas Cowboy home number two, please.
No, okay.
And we'll see you next week. On the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com.